You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the July-August 2022 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part A. On the topic of getaways, board and room, a sleepover dining venture in the Pacific Northwest draws from a luxe overseas tradition by Gabe Ulla. In the photos, a tributary guest room. Okta's own 5-acre regenerative farm run by Katie Bow, who is growing 200 different varieties of plants. And Leitner, who attended culinary school in Portland, returns to the area with a twist on the concept of all-inclusive. When you visit most special occasion restaurants, you eat for a few hours, take a photo in the kitchen, go home, and that's that, says the chef Matt Leitner, whose highly anticipated return to the American dining scene, Okta, opens this summer at the new 8-suite Tributary Hotel in Oregon's Willamette Valley. Here, you never leave. Hotel is something of a misnomer when it comes to this self-described sanctuary of slow that features plenty of exposed brick and a fireplace in every room. Inn doesn't quite do the trick either. And even though the morning meal Leitner and his team of 20 will prepare for guests promises to be memorable, you shouldn't call it a bed and breakfast. Tributary is a restaurant with rooms, an intimate destination where the team orchestrating your tasting menu is responsible for every aspect of your visit. If you're not eating at Okta, you're probably not staying at Tributary. Dinner is the reason. Food is the focus. The concept will sound familiar to any gastronaut who has made the pilgrimage to the dearly departed, spectacularly remote Fäviken in Järven, Sweden, fine dining temples Michel Brasse, Maison Trois Rois, or Le Pré du Génie in France. Real, nestled among the hills of Abruzzo, or Massimo Bottura's Casa Maria Luigia in Modena. This immersive sensibility is central to the Japanese ryokan and widely available in the UK. The latter is the birthplace of the term restaurant with rooms. Right around the time Tributary opens, Aussie expat chef James Henry will begin serving overnight guests at Le Doyenne. A remodeled horse stable an hour's drive from Paris. And in November, London's Margot Henderson will launch the Three Horses, a pub with lodgings, in the Somerset countryside. Leitner believes that as travelers increasingly plan their vacations around food, the tradition will take hold further in the United States. The chef cites the success of Single Thread, the 3-Michelin-starred California wine country ryokan, launched in 2016. In some ways, I describe these destinations as the reverse of what inns used to be, says the Yale historian Paul Friedman. The inn was historically a place to sleep, to be protected during the night, and it had to serve food as a convenience. The priority has changed. Some restaurants with rooms are more plush than others. A good number include accommodations simply because there's nothing else nearby. But Friedman appreciates the one crucial amenity they all deliver. You can drink all you want, because the only thing you have to do at the end of dinner is walk upstairs. There's an air of inevitability to Leitner's latest endeavor. The Nebraska-born chef attended culinary school in Portland. After a stint in Europe, he returned to the city and earned national acclaim at the restaurant Castagna, serving food that filtered the avant-garde naturalism He'd absorbed at Muguritz in Spain's Basque country through an Oregon lens. In 2011, Leitner moved east and earned 2 Michelin stars at the tasting counter Atera. Whether fussing over a corsage of edible wildflowers or tinting a baguette with squid ink to fashion a copy of a razor clam, wrote New York Times critic Pete Wells, Mr. Leitner is opening our eyes again to how busy nature has been. 4 years later, the chef left the restaurant for consulting work and fatherhood. The plan was always to return to the Pacific Northwest. This time, Leitner will resist the urge to bend nature to his will. These won't be dishes that we've spent years tinkering over, he says of Okta, which takes its name from the unit of measurement for cloud cover. The food will be more spontaneous. He envisions guests visiting the growers and artisans that form the ecosystem of the restaurant, or spying something curious taking shape in the kitchen during prep hours and tasting it on the spot. I want the sommelier to randomly knock on your door to ask if you want to poke around the cellar, or to have someone bring up the latest new snacks from the larder and leave them as a surprise, Leitner says. Tributary's general manager is Christine Langelier, a veteran of 11 Madison Park and Blue Hill at Stone Barns, 2 northeastern bucket list destinations known to bend over backward. EMP famously employed dream weavers to research guest hobbies and preferences in order to present them with personalized surprises during their meal. When Google fell short, servers would gather intel from conversations overheard in the dining room. Our goal, says Leitner, is basically to never say no. High life. Private jet companies are making it easier, sort of, to experience rare air, with illustrations by Cynthia Kittler. Aero. First class on a 16-seater from $700. Passenger's favorite drink awaits. Ideal passenger, tech lackey, heading to the boss's Sun Valley compound for trust-building retreat. Flexjet, layovers encouraged. Ideal passenger, stop-happy sales mogul with an pal in every port. Wheels up, membership options, perks, and partnerships galore. Ideal passenger, obsessed with card points. Canyon Ranches biannually melts at the words all-inclusive. Blade, on-demand helicopters and float planes. Ideal passenger, literal coastal elite, even the Gulf counts, who loathes airport traffic and loves water landings. Sentient Jet. From $187,000 for light jet membership, ultra short flight friendly. Ideal passenger, city slicker with Marie Antoinette, farmer fantasies, and a weekend place just a tad tough to reach by train. VistaJet, pay as you fly, library on board, veterinarian vetted pet program. Ideal passenger, unironically uses the term fur baby, employs a book stylist for shelfies. NetJets, partial ownership and leasing, book up to 4 hours before takeoff. Ideal passenger, desperately serendipitous boss who adores last-minute in-person meetings with the underlings. Your own G650ER from $52 million, 18 seats, anytime, anywhere. Ideal passenger, stacks on stacks on stacks. Climate change who? Bore on the floor, etc., etc. on to beauty kink about it. Makeup artist Isamaya French pours her ingenuity into a namesake line, starting with a boundary testing drop by Laura Regensdorf. Photograph of Isamaya by Stephen Klein. Along with Isamaya, the eponymous line by Isamaya French, pictured here, includes a brow hold, face serum, mascara, and shadow palette. People often talk about my work being transformative, but actually the way I use makeup is just to be more of myself, says Isamaya French on a spring afternoon. Today, that manifests as a fluttery lash paired with a sheer tiger-striped top and leather pants. Other times, the makeup artist toolkit for self-actualization veers from ice blue contact lenses to alien prosthetics. In My New Flesh, her 2021 short film with We Present, she reclines in a tub, her skin translucent as octopus arms sprout from her head. More of myself in her singular dreamscape is broadly defined. The Londoner has long played the wizard behind the curtain, painting experimental runway looks. Yunya Watanabe, Tom Brown, and advising cosmetics houses, Byredo, Burberry, YSL. But the conventional wisdom that rules the beauty industry, all pretty samey, as she puts it, doesn't factor into her debut brand, Isamaya. The idea of having the same thing on a shelf for 10 years doesn't make sense to me. Instead, she envisions a series of collections, each a portal to a whole new world. French's initial lineup is less safe than safe word, with aesthetic roots in BDSM. The rubber lash mascara, inky black with a mesh effect lift, sports a chrome hoop, partly inspired by a Japanese piercing book. So does Skinlac, a clean formulated boost of hyaluronic acid. The lip-plumping serum with ginger root lends a sooty tint, while the Stronghold brow lac cracks the metaphorical whip. Everything about this brand should feel like cinema, she says. What applies to the campaign video? That applies to the campaign video by Stephen Klein, starring French, a former dancer in head-to-toe custom latex. The look inspires the shadow palette, industrial Berlin tones with brighter flares. It's great to have crazy ideas, but at the end of the day, these are super wearable, she says, adding that core products will eventually follow. But I've got so much to get out of my system first. Sense of self. More than an olfactive accessory, these fragrances encourage an atmospheric shift from the inside out. Victor and Rolf Good Fortune, this amethyst-topped scent, jasmine, vanilla, gentian fennel accord, signals a depth of emotional understanding, says collaborator FKA Twigs. Costa Brasil Aroma, an ode to Amazonian brew resin used by indigenous people. This woodsy blend bottles up a magic moment, says founder Francisco Costa. Boda Earth Number 1. With black turmeric and frankincense, earth is comforting and mysterious. The energy we come from and return to, says founder and nose Emily Lamy. Vireo Free OO. This is about liberation and sensuality, says founder Yasmin Sewell. Speaking of scent as a mood shift, summery citrus notes with jasmine, saman Ibiza.
Thank you.
Still more on beauty, screenshots. If the quintessential summer movie involves full sun, sculpted biceps, and courtship antics, then Fire Island is reason to hit the theaters. Set in the titular East Coast enclave, the queer rom-com, based on Pride and Prejudice, takes its ensemble cast from underwear rave to beach. The off-camera best friend was sunscreen, says Matt Rogers, a lead in the film, pictured here with Bowen Yang and writer-star Joel Kim Booster. Here, Rogers plays irreverent matchmaker, a la an Austin character, with the best new sunscreens and evocative film classics by Laura Regensdorf. In the photos, she's Shiseido Point Break, a water-resistant sunscreen, with a portion of sales supporting the World Surf League's environmental efforts. I'm very cowabunga about that. That's a surf thing, right? Point Break is on the brain. Hang ten, Keanu. Ultimate Sun Protector Lotion SPF 50+. Habit Overboard. This is as refreshing as it sounds, almost like a sunscreen and fragrance in one. I can picture Goldie Hawn's character in Overboard chilling on a yacht with cucumbers on her eyes and this SPF nearby. The fine mist application is a nice touch. Number 38, Cucumber Mister SPF 38. Supergoop, Shakespeare in Love. Wow, this is SPF 50, but it still feels very light. Supergoop, no relation to Gwyneth, but watch her Oscar-winning performance. Sun protection in Elizabethan times left a lot to be desired. But then again, they did wear a lot of garb every single face. Watery lotion SPF 50. Glow recipe, Call Me By Your Name. It really smells like watermelon. Makes me want to be bitten into. Also, the niacinamide helps with brightening, looking and feeling tasty and safe. While we're making questionable allusions to fruit, Call Me By Your Name. Watermelon Glow Sunscreen SPF 50. Dune, Malin and Goetz, Fire Island. Dune has a retro font, a transparent gel formula for all skin tones, and a name like the Bodyguard. Then again, Malin and Goetz, behind this hydrating SPF, is run by a gay couple in New York. Two screens for Fire Island. The Bodyguard SPF 30. Mineral sunscreen SPF 30. Clark's Botanicals, Spider-Man. This invisible hero has invisible ingredients that are truly heroic. Hyaluronic acid, marine algae, I'll always sign up. No Way Home kinda deals with an invisible hero. Maybe that is a spoiler. I'm not on a Marvel contract, so it's okay. Invisible hero sunscreen, SPF 30. Vacation, not another teen movie. I mean, A+ for presentation. I'm protected from the sun and get to feel like I myself am a dessert getting a whipped cream topping. Sexy. And is that piña colada I smell? The film pairing of choice. Not another teen movie. Chris Evans. Hashtag IYKYK. Classic whip. SPF 30. Eau de Cité. It's complicated. Now, this has a serum-like formula, squalane to nourish the skin barrier, green tea, niacinamide, calendula. This is some Nancy Myers-level sun protection, so it's complicated, just like the scientific know-how that went into this. Mineral Drops Sheer Sunscreen SPF 50. K-Skin from Justin to Kelly. Winnie Harlow created this. I inherently trust supermodels on skincare. The vanilla amber scent throws it back to my tanning oil days. Obviously, I'm going to say the most famous beach movie of all time. From Justin to Kelly, right, y'all? Isle Body Oil, SPF 30. Fame ball. For those who have it all, owning a soccer team has become the ultimate status symbol, by Craig Coyne. Opening illustration by Pratap Chalk, which shows soccer players in a filled stadium. You must be exhausted. Without fail, it's the first thing I hear when someone learns I have a baby at home. They're not wrong. I've been ravaged by fatigue. Sleep has been impossible for weeks. Not because of my kid, though. She's out cold for 12 hours a night. You see, in my head, I just missed out on owning an English Premier League football club. I love soccer. Having my own professional team, even just a minority stake, would really make my day. I'm not a billionaire, which is inconvenient, but one of my closest friends is, and friends share. He still has an umbrella of mine. I've never even asked for it back. And as irrational as this may be, when my buddy joined a consortium vying to buy Chelsea Football Club, I felt as if I would soon own a slice of it. The problem, and what haunts my sleepless nights, is that simply being a billionaire, or having one for a friend, isn't enough. 2 days after Russia invaded Ukraine, oligarch Roman Abramovich promised to step back and hand over stewardship and care of Chelsea FC to the trustees of its charitable foundation. Less than a week later, the Putin pal, former governor of Chukotka and owner of the world's third largest yacht, announced he would sell the team out of concern for the best interest of the club, the fans, the employees, as well as the club's sponsors and partners. Rumors swirled, pundits pontificated, and many of the world's wealthiest found themselves competing to court public favor and seduce the Chelsea faithful. A group led by hedge fund guru Ken Griffin and the Ricketts family, owners of the Chicago Cubs, withdrew their offer after Joe Ricketts, the family patriarch, was caught sending emails with racist language and vexing conspiracy theories. Three potential ownership groups were left slugging it out. Among their ranks were ex-Disney CEO Bob Iger, tennis great Serena Williams, Facebook co-founder Eduardo Saverin, played by Andrew Garfield in The Social Network, since you were wondering, Formula One god Lewis Hamilton, and a bunch of really rich dudes. And that's what got me in the end. There are too many rich people. In 2021, Forbes reported that 2,755 billionaires call Earth home. That means you could charge $1 billion for a concert at Nashville's Ryman Auditorium, sell a ticket to everyone who can afford one, and still leave a few hundred billionaires out in the cold. Certain things are finite. Soccer is the world's most popular sport, by far, and the English Premier League is its most popular professional league. There are only 20 Premier League clubs, so anytime one hits the market, it's billionaire catnip. But we're also not talking about any Premier League club. This is Chelsea. The reigning UEFA Champions League and FIFA Club World Cup champion, Chelsea is as sexy a brand can get. As an asset, if you want to reduce it to such, it's nearly unmatchable. Chelsea FC plays its home games at Stamford Bridge, adjacent to, you guessed it, Chelsea, a royal borough that includes a few of London's wealthiest council wards along with a few of its poorest. Made in Chelsea may be Britain's answer to rich kids of Beverly Hills, but a search for Chelsea grin on Urban Dictionary reveals how the notorious Chelsea headhunters, soccer hooligans of the highest order, have allegedly sliced the corners of opposing fans' mouths and left them looking like Heath Ledger's Joker. LeBron James has seen quite the return on another Premier League team, Liverpool Football Club. The $6.5 million or so he invested back in 2011 is now estimated to be worth north of $32 million. slews of other American A-listers are investing closer to home. Matthew McConaughey jumped at the chance to buy into Austin FC, one of Major League Soccer's newest franchises. He's even the club's self-appointed Minister of Culture, a position whose responsibilities include, in McConaughey's own words, hanging on to the DNA of who we are and why we love Austin. He can be seen banging a drum on the sidelines of home games. Next illustration, Serena Williams, Lewis Hamilton, Todd Bowley, Rob McElhenney, Ryan Reynolds, Natalie Portman, Abby Wambach, LeBron James, and Matthew McConaughey, all dressed in soccer uniforms and kicking soccer balls. Natalie Portman, Jennifer Garner, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Ciara, Russell Wilson, Naomi Osaka, James Corden, Drew Carey, Oscar De La Hoya, Marshawn Lynch, Diplo, Christina Aguilera, Alex Ovechkin, Kate Upton, Eva Longoria, and a host of others have joined McConaughey in turning the beautiful game into the sexiest celebrity investment. Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney had never met in person when they teamed up to buy Wrexham AFC, a fifth-tier Welsh side turned media darling and the subject of their upcoming TV series. Unsurprisingly, soccer and celebrity collide nowhere like they do in Los Angeles. Will Ferrell, a die-hard soccer guy married to a former collegiate player, co-owns MLS's Los Angeles FC with Magic Johnson, Mia Hamm, and husband Nomar Garcia-Para. Tony Robbins, a co-founder of YouTube, and a bunch of others who've made a brick of cash. Ferrell keeps a low profile at home games with his lucky gold pants and t-shirt, featuring the club's head of security, a fan favorite at Bank of California Stadium. For many celebrities, soccer presents an opportunity to invest in strong women, like the ones we've seen transcend the world of sports and emerge as bona fide stars and role models. This is America. We like to be number one. And if our men's national team has yet to dominate on the global stage, our women have demonstrated dynastic greatness since the inaugural Women's World Cup in 1991. Portman helped establish the National Women's Soccer League's Angel City FC after hearing that Abby Wambach, a generational talent, two-time gold medalist, and World Cup champion, needed a job. Unlike Peyton Manning and Kobe Bryant, her fellow 2016 ESPYs Icon Award recipients, Wambach didn't retire with a bunch of commas in her bank account. Portman joined forces with venture capitalist Kara Nortman to bring professional women's soccer to Los Angeles. Hollywood's newest and rhymiest power couple, Portman and Nortman, recruited the likes of Williams, Jessica Chastain, Aguilera, America Ferreira, Gabrielle Union, Garner, Rachel Zoe, Jay Shetty, and Alexis Ohanian. Wambach also joined the group and pushes for higher salaries, better working conditions, and 401k plans to enable these athletes to retire comfortably the way their male counterparts do. Fittingly, the sporting world's greatest gender equity pioneer, Billie Jean King, sits alongside Wambach in the Angel City FC owner's box. In the final days of Chelsea negotiations, Abramovich, who insists that any money made from the sale will find its way to a charity, demanded an additional $627 million. At that point, my group, in which I had no actual role whatsoever, was removed from consideration, and a consortium led by Todd Bowley, the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of Eldridge Industries, was declared the preferred bidder. Bowley withstood a last-minute challenge from Blighty's own Sir Jim Ratcliffe, the chairman and CEO of Ineos Chemical Company. Ratcliffe entered the race well past the entry deadline, with what could have otherwise proved a game-changing bid of $5.3 billion. His statement read, "This is a British bid for a British club." It's worth noting that English Premier League giants Arsenal, Manchester United, and Liverpool are all owned by Americans, while Ratcliffe is based in Monaco. Ratcliffe's curiously timed bid, which felt like telling the table I got this after someone else's credit card is tucked in the billfold, whiffed, and Abramovich, who bought Chelsea in 2003 for $233 million, will sell it to Boley and his partners for $5.33 billion, roughly the GDP of Greenland and Belize combined. I'm so happy for Boley, who already owns a piece of the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Los Angeles Lakers, while I slum it with zero stake in any professional sports franchise. Not that I quit. Just you wait. I'll befriend myself into an owner's box, or I'll wander the streets aimlessly, sobbing in the rain, while some billionaire has my umbrella. Now we move on to the topic of odd couples, war of the poses. The 24/7 glare of social media has rendered private disagreements between celebrity spouses a thing of the past. By Rachel Dodes. Opening illustration by Nicole Rifkin. Mixed messages. Clarence Thomas with wife Jenny and Shailene Woodley with Aaron Rodgers have been called on to account for their partners' beliefs. The recriminations, hand-wringing, and theorizing began on Twitter right after Will Smith rushed the stage at the Oscars and slapped Chris Rock for making a joke about Smith's wife, actor Jada Pinkett Smith. Some wondered why Pinkett Smith hadn't intervened to block her husband, as if this were even possible. Others suggested she was somehow responsible for his behavior because she appeared to roll her eyes after Rock's joke, as if an eye roll was an incitement to violence. Just about everyone wondered when Pinkett Smith would publicly comment on the whole debacle, as if this were a necessary corrective for the public discourse to continue to function. Pinkett Smith maintained her silence for 2 months, finally commenting on her popular talk show, Red Table Talk, in June. "My deepest hope is that these two intelligent, capable men have an opportunity to heal, talk this out, and reconcile. Until then, Will and I are continuing to do what we have done for the last 28 years, and that's keep figuring out this thing called life together," she said, before moving on to the focus of the show, alopecia, which incidentally caused her hair loss, the subject of Rock's joke. There was a time when a celebrity couple could just exist as a couple, when people didn't feel compelled to publicly account for their partner's unusual behavior or bizarre viewpoints. "Those days are long gone," says James Carville, the Democratic strategist who for 29 years has been married to Republican consultant Mary Madeleine. "I don't even speak for Mary," says Carville. "If they ask, I say, if you want something from Mary, call her and ask her yourself." The most famous across-the-aisle duo in recent American history, Madeleine and Carville, used to dazzle us with their witty repartee on CNN, where they appeared regularly until 2013. But these days, they have been relegated to the status of an historical reference point, says Carville. "We're out of fashion." To be sure, their relationship took root prior to the advent of social media. Now, if you're a high-profile person hosting a talk show or podcast, sharing photos on Instagram and letting fans into your personal life, staying silent about your spouse is a luxury that no longer exists. Yet distancing oneself publicly while remaining in the relationship can be a high-wire act. Just look at what happened to Cheryl Hines. The Tuba Heavy Curb Your Enthusiasm theme song might as well have been playing in the background as her husband, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., an environmental lawyer and wackadoodle conspiracy theorist, stood in front of the Lincoln Memorial in January, addressing a crowd of unmasked anti-vaxxers. Speaking at the Defeat the Mandates and American Homecoming rally, Kennedy proclaimed that the people assembled before him, the people who oppose common sense public health guidelines amid a global pandemic that has killed 1 million Americans, have less recourse than the Jews did under Nazi occupation. "Back then, you could hide in an attic like Anne Frank did," he said. A clip from the speech inevitably went viral, and viewers looked to Hines for an explanation. Hines became known for playing Larry David's wife on Curb. A supremely gifted improviser, she emerged as an iconic straight man of our time, an oasis of common sense juxtaposed with her on-screen husband's obtuseness. Horrified and unsure of where else to turn, fans of Hines, including me, misguidedly hoped she would shut her real husband, her real-life husband, down like she has done so magnificently with her fictional one. But short of announcing that she was filing for divorce, what could possibly be satisfying? I certainly felt the sting of disappointment the following day when Hines replied, blandly writing on Twitter, "My husband's opinions are not a reflection of my own. While we love each other, we differ on many current issues." Which issues? The day after that, Hines released a more specific statement. "My husband's reference to Anne Frank at a mandate rally in D.C. was reprehensible and insensitive. The atrocities that millions endured during the Holocaust should never be compared to anyone or anything. His opinions are not a reflection of my own. Later that week, she spent the first 10 minutes of the podcast she co-hosts talking about the incident, even breaking into tears at one point. You and I have made these emotional connections with our listeners, and I don't know, they feel like our friends, Hines said to co-host Tig Notaro. I don't feel right to start a show and not say, listen, we know that something serious happened and is happening. The serious thing that happened was never specified. Actor Shailene Woodley was quiet for many months regarding the anti-vax views of her on-again, off-again fiancé, Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Woodley, in contrast to Hines, is not exactly known for being a beacon of rationality on television or in real life. She has, for example, said that she eats clay, suntans her vagina, and regularly consults a celebrity astrology coach. Still, after it was revealed that Rodgers misled the public about his vaccination status and was fined by the NFL for attending a party while unmasked, Woodley's mentions were filled with fans criticizing her for somehow being anti-vax by association, even though she hadn't disclosed her own vaccination status. It wasn't until the Packers lost to the 49ers in the playoffs, putting Rodgers back in the news, that Woodley's camp decided to weigh in on the controversy in a typically Hollywood fashion through an anonymous source in People. The couple decided to agree to disagree about things and not debate them, a source said. Which things? The coronavirus pandemic, coupled with the tumult following the 2020 election, sent shockwaves through our already strained interpersonal relationships. 15% of Americans reported ending a friendship over politics, according to a June 2021 survey by the American Enterprise Institute. Add social media to the mix, and you can witness the technological embodiment of the aphorism, "Show me who you love, and I'll tell you who you are." In the recent past, some celebrities have registered their disagreement with their spouses without addressing them directly. In 2017, supermodel Gisele Bündchen tweeted a link to the People's Climate March to protest Trump's environmental policies on the same day her husband, Tom Brady, was supposed to visit the White House. Brady, who reportedly supported Trump and kept a MAGA hat in his locker, skipped the visit, citing a scheduling conflict. George Conway, a conservative lawyer and never Trumper, has thus far avoided name-checking his wife, former Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway, when sharply criticizing the former administration. Liberated from her White House responsibilities, Kellyanne appears to be taking a different tack. In her new memoir, Here's the Deal, she writes that she considered George's negative tweets about Trump to be a violation of their marriage vows. Yet, they are still married. Thus far, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has not made a statement about his wife's seditious text to former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows following the election, even amid calls that he should recuse himself from any cases involving the insurrection. Perhaps nobody has threaded the needle more deftly than social media queen Kim Kardashian, who is still finding herself having to explain Kanye West's political views, even though they are no longer together. In December, Kardashian appeared on Barry Weiss's podcast, Honestly, and recounted how she argued with her then-husband about wearing a MAGA hat on Saturday Night Live in 2018. Now, she says, she realizes that West's insistence on standing in his truth and wearing the hat is a cool quality, and even if it's not what I agree with, or even if I would have done it differently, I think it's commendable. Kardashian knows better than anyone that if you've built a community with your fans, you're going to have to address the elephant in the room that you may or may not be married to. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.